Welcome to a brand new episode of the Internet's Most Hated Mafia-Themed Geek Podcast, Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It's I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. And this week, our interview series continues with the lovely actress Liz Priestley. That's right, Liz Priestley joins the show this week. You know, it was one of these, the conversation we had was one of those that we could have lasted another half hour, 45 minutes, if not another hour. But the thing is, technology was against us. Because, folks, as you guys and gals out there know, we tend to use Skype and VoiceMeeter to record our interviews for people that can't make it in studio, especially with the pandemic and so forth and so on. And a few weeks ago, maybe a week or so ago, we had an update with Windows 10. And when Windows 10 updates, everything goes foobar. Skype, VoiceMeeter, Audacity, everything. Even our mics have issues working because of these updates. And it's not until these other programs get updated, then things tend to get ironed out. And this week was no exception to that. Meaning, we had instances where Skype would just blank out for 10 to 15 seconds. Therefore, those sections were trimmed out. Or in regards to VoiceMeeter, when we record these calls, it's either I'm doing this or I'm doing this, and you could barely hear me. So that's, therefore, you're going to have instances where it sounds like my mouth is right on the microphone and there's a bunch of static. I'm sorry I had to do that, folks. I don't like to do that, but that's what happens. You know, it's when I boost it and use VoiceMeeter and try to adjust the levels just right. It's kind of like using power windows. It's either too much or too little. You can't get that sweet spot. And also meaning that if I adjust it just a hair too much, you can hear me adjusting my shirt, adjusting my hat, taking a drink, lifting something off a table. The ant that's crawling managed to get inside and crawling across my kitchen counter, you're able to hear it. Or else, if I adjusted a hair the other way, you can't hear me that well. I got to boost it. So, the problem in the upcoming interview seems to have relieved that issue. So, fingers crossed, and hopefully we don't get another Windows update in the next couple of weeks, and thus tossing everything out of the window again. But for now, I tried to adjust things the best I could. Liz's side of the conversation came in very well. Too bad we couldn't have her in studio or we go to her. She's more than welcome. Liz, if you're listening to this, you're more than welcome to come back on the show for other interviews or just to chit-chat. I don't care. I'll be more than happy to have you on. She was a very wonderful conversation. I'm going to step back and allow the whole conversation to begin. Again, standard disclaimers that kind of filled you in on apply, and I do apologize for that. So, again, here's our conversation with Miss Priestley. Hello, everybody. I know everything sounds weird again. Again, we're recording this through Skype. Yeah, I know, folks. Skype. We hate it. You hate it. But with the current situation, it's much needed, and I'm not going all the way to Philly to as much as I would love to speak to this guest in person in Philly. Well, it's Philly, but we're not going to hold that against her. But we have actress Liz Priestley with us today. Would you say hi to the
Hello.
Folks at home?
Hi from Philly. It's not that bad here. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. If I'm being truthful, I'm technically in the Philly suburbs, so I don't know if that counts, but...
Oh, it counts better than Philly itself.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying, so, you know.
I've drove in Philly, and it's... Oh, God. If you don't... I'm like, the first few times driving around Philly, it's like, why is there, like, 90% of the roads going north, none going south, and the rest going, like, east, and none going west?
I like to say sometimes that it seems like Philly's streets were designed by ants, but that's just because I have a horrible sense of direction, and I tend to get lost a lot when I'm driving, so, but I, you know, to someone who's not from here, driving downtown in, like, Center City, Philadelphia would be just so extremely upsetting to me. So, believe me, I understand.
Oh, there's a reason. The first few times, like I said, the first few times got lost severely to the point that me and my friends nicknamed it going on the Rocky Tour.
Yes.
Why are we in this section? Oh, Rocky was filmed here. No, yes. It wasn't. Yeah. That's what
no. Only parts of it. Well, yeah, parts of it. So, yeah.
Oh, look, the stairs where you ran up again, Chris.
Yes. How many times did you ever get to run up them?
No, we were just, I was just too busy getting ribbed by my friends at the time. So this was a few years ago, many, many years ago. This was the early 2000s at that point. So funny.
Yeah, I've ran up those steps once is enough because it's a lot of steps and you're just like, wow, that's a lot. It really challenges your cardio. But there, you know, there's people that work out on those steps every day. That's like the exercises. They run up and down the steps, and that'll do you. It'll get you in shape real quick. But I'm like, do it once so you can say I ran up the Rocky steps, and then you never have to do it again. You know what I mean?
I'd probably wander up and down a couple of times. I'm trying to get more healthy, so at least on my end.
Yeah. It's hard. I start every January being like, I'm going to... I'm going to have a dry January. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to start working out. I do the whole, you know, the diet resolution, that cliche thing. And this year, I was doing pretty well up until 6 days in, but I was doing pretty well for the first 5 days. And then, you know, after day six, I was like, well, that was nice. But it's hard. It's really hard. And I'm not one of those people that sees food as fuel, you know, and I've heard you have to get into that mindset if you're going to be healthy. You have to look at food as just fuel for your body. I'm not one of those people. I like food too much. I enjoy it. I'm like, you know, probably the higher the fat content, the more I enjoy it. So, yeah, it's bad. I need to do better with that. But I did start this month off really well. So maybe I have it in me to pick it back up if I really wanted to.
I have to be, for me, I was kind of forcibly put in that situation, not by choice. My listeners know that about midway through 2020, I was diagnosed to be type 2 diabetic. So it's like,
wow.
And I was kind of like you. I had a seafood diet, so to speak. Ooh, look, mm-hmm. You know. I'm not, you know, making fun of body weight, but it was just that my mindset. Ooh, look, food. What do you mean it's free? Okay, that's even better. You know, I'll try some of this. I'll try some of this. Ooh, look, they have shrimp. This is fancy. So, but now it's just like, I told somebody, it's like, I feel like a vegan in a way because I'm so new being a diabetic. I have to kind of declare it. I'm like, I'm a diabetic. I'm like, oh, God.
That must be a really, really tough transition to try to make. That's really hard. Oh, man. I'll tell you, if I went from how I eat now to trying to go to vegan, I don't know that I would be very successful. That's a really big change. So, man, I'm hugging you from a distance because I'm commiserating with you because that just sounds awful. And I'm very sorry to hear. But I'm glad that, you know, you found out about it. And at least you know that you can do something. Yeah. Oh, man.
The transition for me was very easy. Mm-hmm. I have friends that are diabetics and their sugars are like constantly over 200, and that's the norm for them.
Right.
They look at me and like, they're like, what's your sugar? Oh, I've been under 100 for the past 3 days. They're like, what? How the hell do you do it? I'm like, you don't realize I got everything, you know, as much as I want that apple pie and some whipped cream and some ice cream, I can't have that now.
Yeah, I can't do that. That's so hard. It's so interesting that that we're talking about this because literally yesterday and the day before yesterday, I have a daughter who's 13, and we just recently discovered the reboot of the Babysitter's Club on Netflix, which I know has been out for like a year, but we just never really got around to checking it out. And she, the day before yesterday, she's like, Mom, can we watch something together? And I said, yeah. And we sat down and we watched a couple episodes of The Babysitter's Club, which is a series of books that I grew up just loving. Like, I was obsessed with those books. And I don't know if you're familiar, but one of the main characters is a diabetic. And that's like a big plot line in the books, is that, you know, she's a 13-year-old girl who has just recently been diagnosed with diabetes, and I believe in the book she has type 1. I think on the show she has type 1 as well, but it's just so interesting because my daughter and I were just having this conversation, or a version of this conversation, yesterday when we were watching her episode. So yeah, I feel like I'm having deja vu in a way, but that's so interesting. And it's like, you know, there's all these scenes in the show where, you know, whenever they have club meetings, the one girl, she always, you know, breaks out these bags of like Twizzlers and watermelon gummies and Skittles. And every time this other girl with the diabetes has to be like, no thanks, I'm good, you know, and she's sitting in the corner eating her Ritz crackers, pretending like, yeah, it's just as good. It's just as good. It tastes like Starburst. So I'm like, no, it doesn't, you know?
Some people have looked at me and said, like, why are you having a Hershey's bar? My sugar was like 80, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's like it has to be in a range, right? It has to be in a certain range,
Like the danger level on the low end is like 70, under 70, but I think the high level is like anything over one, some depends on the doctor or counselor you speak to. Some of them will say about 150. Anything over 150 is starting to be too high. I think some say 180 is to start that start of the too high level. But I try to keep mine between like 100 and 150 because that's what I have. Part of what happened with me is that I had two abscesses that back of my neck, which was the predominant thing that, hey, you got diabetes now, this is what happens. And the doctor that pretty much helped, you know, cleared everything out, I'll put it like that so politely, said try to keep it under 150 because that will help you heal better and mitigate things faster, meaning instead of it being closer to 3 months, it'll be, or 4 months, it'll be closer to 2 months or a month and a half. So I was like, okay, well, that's the number to be, 150.
Yeah, that's the number. Wow. Oh, man. I had a lot of it's crazy.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, a lot of people tell me, I'm sorry. I had a lot of people telling me, it's like, oh, you'll never keep it in that range. Never. I'm like, you don't understand. Many years ago, I was told I couldn't break 100 pounds. I mean, 200 pounds. And I found the right fitness local mom and pop gym, and folks in that gym were very encouraging. They told me how to, you know, instead of, oh, look at this little guy, this, you know, big guy wanting to lose weight, and like, oh, you want to lose weight? Wait, this is what you got to do. Those type of folks,
and
they helped me get into that mindset. And I, when I realized, hey, being a diabetic is that same mindset of getting in shape, that the transition for me, at least for me, was very easy, very simple. And that's why a lot of the folks I speak to in the medical field is like, you took on this like a champ. And they're looking at me and it's like, maybe you should adjust your meds to, in essence, a once per week med instead of like a twice a day, because it's so good and you want to get more in shape. And that could pretty much lower your sugar even more, and possibly put things in the danger level. So as long as you kind of watch stuff, you know, it'll help. But now your tale. You're the guest here. Enough about me.
This is like really interesting to me. But it's funny because I was going to say, I was like, you know, it's funny that I relate everything back to either a movie or a show or like something I've seen like on TV. That's so, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing that like we're having this conversation about diabetes and I'm thinking of like the Babysitter's Club. Like that's so bizarre to me, but I guess that's how actors are. Like that's everything I talk about relates in some way to some kind of a show or a movie or a Broadway show or a song. Maybe that's the musician in me too. I don't know. But
I don't want to injure all that, but me and my co-host kind of had a similar conversation about a week ago. And he said, his words to me was like, my son speaks in meme. I mean, like all the things you see on Facebook. I said, dude, we do the same thing, but it's always movie references and song lyrics. So, you know, it's nothing new. He's just doing it for the time. So, you know, we're the older generation. We speak in like song lyrics and movie references and that the pop culture, you know, that was big during our time. And now in our, in essence, the younger generation, their time is memes and, that sort of thing. So that's what they know. So it's their language.
I mean, it is. It's funny. I do it all the time, and I try not to. But I guess that's just how it is. Like whatever we're surrounded by the most, that's just how it is. Fortunately, my 13-year-old does not speak in meme only to me, which is great because it would drive me nuts. But she does occasionally, she'll drop in. Her thing is because she's a little budding actress as well. So she will relate everything to either like a Grey's Anatomy episode, which I'm not a fan of that show, so it drives me nuts, or, you know, some kind of a Harry Potter reference. And I've had to get on her because what happens is she'll reference somebody from Harry Potter by first name as if the person really exists. And then I'm sitting there for the next like 2 minutes playing catch up in my head going, who is this person? Like we'll be talking, like I bought some jewelry on Amazon rather, for Christmas, and then she launched into this whole thing about I forget the girl's name now, but she was like, well, you know, and then when she got the necklace, you know, blah 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 blah, and it took me until she said, when the necklace started to choke her, I was like, are you talking about Harry Potter? And she's like, yeah, and I'm like, ugh. It drives me nuts. But now the other thing, because she's obsessed with Harry Styles, the singer. So now everything is a Harry Styles song reference. And, you know, I have nothing against Harry Styles. He's fine. But I don't know any of his songs. I could not name a single song. And so she'll make these references. And then she'll kind of look at me like, get it? And then I'll keep going for like another 30 seconds. And then I'll look at her like, oh, was that a Harry Styles reference? And then she'll go, yep. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm out of touch. I'm old now. I don't know.
Oh, I was almost as bad when I was in the hospital. The nurses and the being in the hospital for a while, my listeners kind of know the tale. It's one of the things that they did with me is, like, for the first few days or so, I was laid up in bed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't really get out that off the bed that much. And after a while, it's a little bit of physical therapy to get yourself moving again, walking again. And in comes the tech, the physical therapist. She says, time to go for a walk. And I'm like, but I don't want to go in the cart. You know, because my mindset was directly to Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and she just gives me this look like, what? I'm like, Monty Python?
Yeah. Like, no.
And it's like, no, I don't. I'm like, I'm cultured swine.
There's a whole generation where that humor is like, it's completely lost, and it's such a shame. I don't think my daughter has ever seen a single Monty Python sketch. And I blame myself now because I should have shown her before now. But I honestly, I don't think she's ever seen a single one, and which is such a tragedy. It really is. But yeah, that's funny. I feel like that's something only a handful of people would get, and that's hysterical. But
it got worse. I made a Stand reference when I was leaving the hospital, and this is before the reboot came out. I forget where it's premiering. I think it's CBS All Access.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have no idea.
I made a reference to it, and she was like, "Wait, what?" I'm like, "What? You never seen Stand?" Like, it's on Netflix. You could rent it. It launched Gary Sinise's career, you know?
Yeah.
Like, wow.
It's a tragedy, isn't it? No, it's, you know, it's sad because unless those movies are, like you said, being rebooted or, you know, remade or, you know, highlighted in some way on a streaming service, there's just a whole generation of people who just don't ever see them. And it's just like, oh man, this is the movie that launched so-and-so's career. They're like, yeah, I've never seen it. And you're like, oh. Oh man.
For some people, it's like, sit right down.
Yes. Depending like, on, let you know, me tell you.
It's like, sit right down. Mommy or daddy is going to just show you something really.
Yes. Good. Like, it's time for an edumacation here.
And a Facebook friend of mine, her best bud, after finding out she never saw aliens before in her life, decided. Sit, in essence, that quote, sit right down, I'm going to show you something. And it came out on a live stream, and I think there's a meme out there. It's like showing my friends my fandom. And it was the perfect physical representation of that meme of the fan just like chuckling while the newcomer is just screaming at, you know, oh my God. And like,
oh yeah. Well, you know, two nights ago, before we watched the Babysitter's Club, because I had a rare day off, and it, you know, doesn't happen often, but it was wonderful. So my daughter and I, we kind of, you know, we made a whole day out of it. We watched a whole bunch of random stuff, and which is fun, because we used to do, like, when she was younger, we used to call them pajama parties, but we would just, like, camp out in my living room with, like, pillows and blankets and just watch. I mean, we would watch like all of the Lord of the Rings movies or, you know, all of the Harry Potter movies in one go, which is many hours. But the other day we were watching something and I said, oh, you know what I want to watch is The Mummy, like the 1999 version with Brendan Fraser. And she's like, I've never seen it. And I was just like, what do you mean? Like, you know, and she's like, eh. I feel like it's one of those movies that, like, I'll enjoy the opening sequence the best, and then I'll hate the rest of it. And I was like, that's it. Sit down. We're going to watch the movie. It was literally one of those sit down, let me educate you right now moments. And I made her sit here And she loved it, as I knew she would. She loved it. And she did. She found, she watched the opening sequence, and she gives me a look like, it better stay at this level, because that was interesting, and now I'm going to be, like, disappointed if the rest of the movie isn't like this. And I was like, give it a chance. And then she watched it. She was so into it. And I was like, that movie, you know, came out when I was in high school. And so for me, it's a very, you know, kind of nostalgic movie for me. And I was like, you're going to love this. So, yeah, it's funny.
Oh, you just idiot yourself. You're just a young little lass, aren't you?
Well, I didn't say what year in high school, but I was in high school, yes, when it came out. So, yeah, I'm sort of in the middle. I'm not middle aged yet, but I feel like it. My body feels like it.
Don't you say that about me? Why are those kids on my lawn?
Yeah, exactly. I do that now. I'm like, get off my lawn. I get very upset, or when people, like when little kids play around in my car, or when they're walking their dogs around, I'm like, move out of the way. Or the worst is like, if they're doing that, and I'll just take my keys and beep the lock a couple times just to scare the crap out of them, which is, that's so rude, but I love it. I get a kick out of it. But that's how I know I'm old. That's something old, you know, an old crotchety person would do who has nothing better going on than to terrorize her neighbors. That's me.
you and I are probably the tail end of it. It's like, the thing is, where I live at, it's like, I would love to use the threat, don't make me take you to your mama. it's that whole aspect that is like, you see that seems to be like the stereotype. It's like, take them to jail, take them to someplace else, but do not take them to their mama.
Yeah, taking grandma. Them to the mama, that's a serious grandma. Thing. Mm, like, that's a serious that, thing. Yeah.
The kids, and it's like, if I said that, you know, to some of the kids, like, don't make me take you to your mama, they'll be like, yeah, whatever, well, like, what she's gonna do.
Like, oh. Oh, you don't know, do you?
You don't know, there are gang members in East LA afraid of their mama.
Afraid of their mamas, yeah.
But, before we kind of dive even deeper into this fun, kind of a mutual colleague of both of us, Steven mentioned that you were in part of a movie called Urban Cowboys, I think it's called?
It's Concrete Cowboy, Concrete, yeah.
Screwing the name. Was urban, concrete, something along those
lines. Well, you're not wrong, because it is urban. And I think that's why, you're not the first person to say it. I think that's the confusion, because it is a cowboy story set in an urban setting, which is kind of what makes it unusual. So believe me, I think it's an understandable mix-up. I would definitely call it Urban Cowboys sometimes. Actually, up until like a month ago, I was calling it Concrete Cowboys, and it's just cowboy singular. So I was in the movie, and I was still getting the name wrong. Like, you know, that's bad. I have no excuses.
What can you tell me or tell our listeners about this movie? Again, if you can't say much, please just say what you're able to.
Yeah. I could say a bit. It's basically about a 15-year-old boy who is, you know, acting up at his home in Detroit with his mom. So she's a single parent. That's me. And he's been kicked out of school several times. He's really just having a hard time. And his mom basically makes the decision of, you know, I've done everything for you that I can, but this is not working. And so I think, you know, you need to have a male influence in your life, and it's time that you got to know who your father was. And so she basically drops him off on his father's doorstep in the middle of the night in Philadelphia and leaves him there for the summer. But what the son doesn't realize, and what the mother, you know, doesn't really tell him, is that his father isn't just this, you know, random, I don't know, deadbeat dad in Philadelphia somewhere. He's a leader of a community of black cowboys in Philadelphia. So my son thinks he's coming into, you know, to Philly, but he's coming into a whole different side of Philly that most people don't even know about. And what was really cool about this movie, and one of the things I'm very excited for people to learn about when they do see the movie, is that the community that we shot the movie in is real. And there are actual black cowboys in Philadelphia and in most major cities across the U.S. And the fact that they've been there since just before or just after the Civil War, depending on which city you're talking about, and have been there all this time, and have really sort of been, you know, for lack of a better word, whitewashed out of the whole cowboy history. But, you know, they've been around, they're still around, and we get to tell their story through this story. And so that's what I'm excited about. We had actual cowboys in our movie. One of them plays a lead role, and he's so good. And he's never been in front of a camera before. But it's, you know, it's a real community with real people, real cowboys, and it's a real story set against the framework of this, you know, father-son story. And then, of course, it's Idris Elba is playing the father, and Caleb McLaughlin is playing the son. Caleb is from Stranger Things. And so, yeah, it's really... love the story. I think it's a very moving story. I think people are going to be unexpectedly moved and also really just blown away, but not just by the story, which in and of itself is very powerful, but I think you're going to see some really amazing performances come out of this movie. Method Man is in this movie. He plays an incredible role as well. Jarrell Jerome is in the movie, and he had just won the Emmy for When They See Us. So we were super, super excited when he won, because we were like, oh my gosh, he's going to be in our film. Like, this is amazing. So, and then, of course, Idris is like, I mean, like, can he do any wrong? I just don't know. I have not seen evidence, but he's so good. And then, of course, Caleb, you know, I'm a Stranger Things fan. And I know what he's capable of doing, but he blew me away in this movie, filming with him. Because I had about a day and a half filming with Idris, and then I had about like 4 days, 4 or 5 days filming with Caleb. So I had the majority of the time with him, and he was just, he's amazing. I learned so much just from watching him, and it's his film debut also, actually. So we got to bond a little bit over that, so it was really cool. So I'm really excited for this, and it's coming out in the spring. They keep changing the date. They haven't given us...
It's like when Steven initially gave me your contact information a few months ago, and I was kind of looking into this movie. It's like, I want to see this. Is it out yet? And,
no.
Talk about it. So part of me is like, I want to watch this. I want to talk about it. You know, because I'm almost that kind of person that wants to discuss this, you know,
yeah.
Watch it, you know, discuss a few aspects about the movie. New listeners, I've done this with indie filmmakers before. I've watched their projects, and I've talked to them, in essence, in their face about their own projects. So, but it's like, I wanted to talk, you know, discuss the movie, because one of the things I've told many people, it seems like hypocrisy from my end. What I say tends to be awkward for you, please let me know. I'm just putting that just in case. I've told people, it's like, what I hate about some particular movies is that they, when it comes to certain topics, it seems like they're forcing it down your throat, and I don't like that. And there are some movies where they might do it, and I've reviewed a movie from an independent creator. Oh, when was it? I think 2018, if not 2019. he DM'd me. It's like, I want you to watch this movie. I'm a creator out of New York City. You know, my movie's on Amazon, and it was from this. I'll use both terms because I'm not sure which way he'll swing the term. He's either an African American or black filmmaker, and I watched it, and it was a very wonderful storyline, and how he mixed in the social commentary and with the storyline, and it was just not just one storyline; it was like two storylines that kind of intertwined, and it was like, that's it, that's what I'm talking about. It's not forcing it; it's telling the story, it's telling the struggle. Mm-hmm. And I like it. It's not, you know, taking a in essence a baseball bat and whacking you in the head with it. It's done subtly, and that's why I loved about it, and I raved about it because this is what I've been telling folks for years. Like, listen, do your own thing. Don't just, you know. And it's like somebody I'd more than happy to support. And even though this has a lot of, as you said, a lot of mainstream popular folks, I'm not knocking Idris at all.
You're right.
Side note, a lot of folks might hear it from, I don't know if I said it before, when the movie came out, I was worried about his role in Dark Tower. I'm a big Stephen King fan, and Dark Tower series is my favorite book line.
Yeah.
I was like very worried about that because as a reader, as a fan, you have a certain mindset. You have a certain person that's going to fit that role.
Sure.
And when Idris was announced as Roland, I'm like, I was very, you know, why Idris? Why, you know, I'm thinking if not Clint Eastwood, his son, you know, because
that's
you know, when you read the book, that's the kind of personality, that's the kind of figure you kind of see in that role. But after watching the movie, I'm like, Idris did a bang-up job as trying to bring as close to that character as he could probably get for that role, and I was very happy with his portrayal. I'm not putting him down in any way, shape, or form. He might not have knocked it out of the park, but he did the best he can do.
And
I'll blame more so the writers of the movie than him at all. He tried his best with it. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of examples of. You know, when you hear the casting announced, you go, what? And, you know, same thing. This is not me knocking Tyler Perry, but when he was announced that he was going to play Alex Cross, I was shocked because Alex Cross is definitely, you know, an older character. And I was like, I don't see Tyler Perry as Alex Cross. Like, that just doesn't, you know, my family were big James Patterson readers. And so I remember when that came out and I was going, what? Like, why? And, you know, I wasn't privy to the casting situation, but, you know, and I saw the movie and I felt afterwards, I was like, you know, I didn't like it. And that's no, you know, disrespect to Tyler Perry, I'm sure he did the best with it that he could have. It just wasn't, to me, it didn't fit. The casting didn't fit the part as envisioned in the source material. So believe me, I get it when it's, you know, when you have it in your head that it should be this person or it should look like this person, and then they cast someone that's just like, what? You know, unfortunately, in our industry. And I just, you know, it's funny because I just read something this morning about...
Pardon me.
I'm sorry, yep.
Skype decided to be Skype, and just the first part of what you were saying kind of just faded out and went blank for maybe about 3 seconds, so...
Oh, okay.
So just kind of fill in everybody what you were talking about before Skype decided to say, nah, screw, you know, heck with her.
Gotcha. Okay. No, what I was saying was, I understand that disappointment of, or that initial disappointment, I should say, of when you hear the casting of a character announced and it doesn't quite jibe with what you've envisioned the character being from the source material. And I was using that example of like a few years ago, or gosh, I don't even know when that movie came out, but Alex Cross with Tyler Perry.
Yeah, it was like right after you said that, you went into something else and Skype went poof.
Oh, well, I was just saying that, you know, no, and it's no disrespect to Tyler Perry, but I, you know, it was like when that came out, I remember going, what? Because, you know, he's a technically an older character.
And with Tyler, you see Matilda.
Yeah, Madea. And it's hard to take him seriously as like a dramatic actor because of that. So yeah, there's that too. It does, you know, as actors, we wanna think that we can just slip into any role and that the audience will accept that. But after, you know, the unfortunate thing is after you reached a certain level of fame or I guess notoriety, it's hard to not see the actor or the popular character that actor made famous. And you know, for me, Alex Cross is an older character, like he's like a Morgan Freeman type of character. And so I remember when that came out, I was like, that's a weird choice. And I remember seeing the movie and being like, I didn't really like it. But, you know, that's what happens. Actors, you know, we take the parts, we do the best that we can, and then you just kind of go, well, I tried. It's like, But, you know, that was one that I remember being like, well, that's weird. And I was reading this morning, they're coming out with a Lucille Ball movie, and Kate Blanchett was supposed to play Lucille Ball, and then she couldn't do it, and so they've now cast Nicole Kidman as her. And, you know, Twitter's in an uproar because they all think that Deborah Messing should do it, since she so brilliantly did a Lucy parody on the Will and Grace revival. And, you know, I remember I was looking at it this morning, and I looked at it, and my first thought was like, now I don't know that if I was casting this, if I would cast Nicole Kidman in a comedy. I don't know, but maybe she could do something different that I don't know about. I don't know.
That's one of the things that, you know, when I was looking, there was like you said, I'm a child of the 80s.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, one of the biggest sitcoms of the day was Night Court.
And oh yeah.
And I've been hearing rumors of kind of a revival, like a kind of reboot. And the person, the actress that played Bernadette in Big Bang Theory is going to be playing, in essence, Judge Stone's daughter. And I'm like, okay. From what I read on it, it sounds like a fit, a possible fit for her.
Sure.
In regards to it. So I want to see how it turns out, especially since John Larroquette is going to be reprising his role as Dan Fielding.
Yeah, so, yeah. That's one of those things. That's one of those things that the chemistry has to be
just right.
Made the original so well. Oh man, it sounds tough. That one in particular sounds tough because I mean, I love John Larroquette, and I'm glad he's coming back. I heard that some of the other people may be reprising their roles as well.
That's what I said. I want to see a few episodes to see how and everything else. But we're agreeing on a lot of the same points. It's like when you see like many years ago with Bryan Cranston in regards to Breaking Bad, everybody kept saying it's like, oh, Malcolm in the Middle, he was
Malcolm in the Middle's dad.
Everybody was like, we can't help but see him as the dad from Malcolm in the Middle, and all of a sudden, boom,
he's Walter White.
Nailed it. And there's also, you have from back in the day, both of us remember the Addams Family movie with Raul Julia being Gomez, knocking it out of the park. You know, it's like there's
the dude from Street Fighter, like
right. And it's like these are folks that, you know, are chewing the scenery, if you will, hard, and they're just you know, they're not phoning it in. You know, they're just gonna do it. They're going to give it their A game no matter what.
Yeah. And it's a fine line, isn't it?
Right. You see that. Sometimes, you know, it's like...
Like the Addams Family...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, some of the people in the Addams Family, it made sense immediately. Like, Christina Ricci made sense immediately. Angelica Houston made sense immediately. And I remember, yeah, Raul Julia. What? The guy from Street Fighter? And then, you know, and same with Bryan Cranston. I remember being like, so Malcolm in the Middle's dad is now going to cook meth. All right. Like, you know, and then of course, yeah, he hit it out of the park. I, you know, when I got cast in this film, I had a similar approach to my audition because I first of all, when I auditioned for it, when I initially auditioned for it, because I did it three times, the initial audition, I didn't know that. Or, you know, Caleb McLaughlin. I didn't really know the scale of what this movie was going to be. I just thought, you know, local movie shooting in Philadelphia, that could be a student film for all we know, you know? But my focus going in there wasn't even really to get a part in the movie. I just wanted the casting director, her name is Diane, and I'd met Diane like six times before that. And she always called me in for, I call them Walmart moms, but you know, those commercials where it's like the mom is super cheerful, you know, she's with the kids and be like, who wants smoothies? Like, and I'm always getting called in for those. And there's nothing wrong with that because, you know, you can't see me on here, but I have a very big smile. Everybody always comments on my big, huge smile. And, you know, I'm very friendly, but I wanted her to know that I could do something dramatic. That was it. I wasn't like, I'm gonna get in this movie or anything else. I was like, I probably don't have a hope and a prayer of getting in this movie. I just want her to see that, you know, Liz Priestley, the one I keep calling in for these happy moms, can play a dramatic mom. And at the time that I was auditioning, the part was written a little differently than how she ends up in the movie. So it really was super, super dramatic. Like in the audition, my character was struggling with a severe drug problem. And they removed that for the movie, which I was happy about. But so for the audition, you know, I looked like crap and I was happy about that. But, you know, she had never, you know, not seen me looking anything less.
Okay, Skype's being Skype again.
An audition, and then this audition, I walk in.
Liz,
I'm sorry.
For a second, Skype was Skype again, and it's like you were talking about that, and that's an audition. All of a sudden, I was there in blank. So, as much as I like Skype because it's easy for me to set up, I hate it because there could be a very interesting story like you were telling, and all of a sudden, there's like 3 seconds of like, damn it, Skype, really? Really?
Gosh darn it, Skype. Yeah. That's okay. What was I saying? No, what I was saying was I think this is where you said, she had never really seen me in anything that wasn't, you know, perfectly presentable at every audition. Which is what you do for auditions, you know, especially if you're going to play the mom of somebody, you try to make it look like you have your crap together. And for this audition, you know, I walked in, I had holes in my clothes, I didn't do my hair, I had a scarf on, I had like crazy makeup, you know, she had never really seen me look like that. And so I really just was like trying to kill that image of, you know, happy-go-lucky Liz. I wanted her to see me as like down and out, hit the bottom Liz, you know? And so that was the goal. But yeah, I think as actors, we kind of naturally fight against our last role or our most well-known roles. We're always fighting for people to see us as someone new or as someone else. And I think the more famous you get, the harder it is, because after a certain point, you're just going, hey, that's Tom Hanks on a beach. That's cool.
Right.
It's like,
I think, what's his name? The he's not a kid anymore, but I still refer to, you could refer to him as a kid, that in essence played Harry Potter. And he's like, I don't want to be known as Harry Potter. I want to, you know, I want to try different roles. I want to try, you know, different things. I don't want to be known as Harry Potter my whole
life. Yeah.
He's done that. It's like, I want to, you know, I give him credit where credit's due, and I'll give any actor or actress, you know, credit where credit's due. And you see that, and it's like, all right, I'll give the movie a chance. I'll give it 5 minutes. I was wrong recently. I was really wrong. I'll never again. But that's just me. As much as I want to see Concrete Cowboys, I love B movies. I love cheese. You know, it's the cornerstone of America. It is America.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it cheese. There's a reason why. I don't know if you agree or not. There's a reason why I hate the term, but it's what it's been attached to it. Black exploitation movies, they're cheap.
Oh, yeah.
They're cheap. Yeah. But they're a part of our culture. I mean, for every Blackula, you got a Shaft, or you got something better.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's something that, at that time, there was a need, and you had a whole mess of creators wanting to fill a need. And during this time as well, you had the whole Kung Fu experience coming into the States. And according to a documentary I watched, again, last year or the year before, both of them kind of fed into each other. You know, and that's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a huge blaxploitation fan, and the history of it is so fascinating to me, because it's like, you know, until those movies came out, black characters didn't even live to the end of their own movies. And then when Sweet Sweetback came out and he lived to the end, and audience members would just like stand up and cheer, or they would be sobbing, because for the first time in their lives, a black man wasn't, you know, shot by the cops or, you know, killed halfway through the movie, but he lived to the end, and he was the protagonist of his own story. I love blaxploitation movies. I love them. And yes, for every Blackula, yes, you get like a Coffee or a Foxy Brown. I'm a huge Pam Grier fan. But I also love B movies as well. I'm a big, my dad and I used to watch Mystery Science Theater all the time. And so I'm a big Mystery Science Theater 3000 fan. And so because of that, I've gotten into like all of the cheesy B movies that they show. And I love them. There's a place for all of it. There really is. There's a place for every kind of cinema. And whether you like it or not is, you know, that's totally subjective, but there's a place for all of it. And I love B movies. I think they're so, you can learn a lot from watching like Roger Corman movies, or, you know, what's his name? I can't think of his name right now. I'm blanking. But I can't think of his name right now, but he's got a handful of them on. Oh, Bert. No, Bert. Bert something or other. He's got a handful of his films on Mystery Science Theater. But I'm a huge B movie fan. I love it. But you know, and the cool thing about this movie that I shot, you know, it was it's a big movie in the sense that, you know, you got your Idris Elbas, you got your Method Man, you got, you know, all these people, but it was an ultra low budget production. And so it was very interesting to see how quickly it went, because we shot the movie in like 28 days. I mean, it was so quick. And it was fascinating for that to be my film debut, my first time on a film set, doing all that stuff. It was really fascinating to kind of see the scaled down version of how a movie is made, and to really kind of feel like you're in the trenches with the director and the crew and everybody. It's really cool. It was such a fun experience. I'm so grateful.
Trust me, I'll say this. You got to see the full scale and, in essence, a AAA production.
Yeah.
you know, me, it's like a buddy of mine, again, many years ago, I pretty much said, you know, we're filming a movie, you know, in a, this horse ranch, you know, it's, you want to be a part of it? Best thing you're going to be is probably a third redneck from the left. I'm like, hey, you pay me a sandwich, you know, I'm down. And they're like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, we can't give you a sandwich, but we can give you water and an IMDb credit. I'm like, cool, I'm down.
Well, you know, I do think it's interesting. Did you hear about
the what?
Who played like a school teacher, and she, after the movie came out, she was very upset about how much she had been paid initially. And so she started a GoFundMe and, you know, raised like, you know, good chunk of change through the GoFundMe. And I remember I saw the story when the GoFundMe was first set up for her. And I read how much she initially made on the movie, and I was like, I just did a movie with Idris Elba, and I didn't even make a third of what you got paid. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I was like, it would not occur to me to make a GoFundMe for that, you know? And it was just so funny because I was reading it, and I was like, wait, should I set up a GoFundMe? Like,
it's like, but with me, it's like, as soon as I got there, and the guy that's a real nice guy, he pretty much handed me a script and said, yeah, everybody decided to kind of back out at the last minute. You're not going to be like the third redneck from the left. You're going to be one of the leading roles for this little bit. And I'm like,
no pressure.
I'm like, yeah, no pressure, but you realize I don't know how to act, right? No one's gonna care. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to chew the scenery as best I can.
Yep.
You know, it's like, and I've had friends say, like, you really can't act. I'm like,
wow!
No, like, I know. Acting.
Thank you, guys. I was doing you a favor.
No, it's my friend. You know, my friends are like, this is the first time I'm watching this movie. God, you suck. It was the first time I ever did a movie. Where were you that day? You were supposed to be the second redneck from the left. Well, I had things.
I was promoted.
Got promoted thanks to you.
That is
and
so
response
funny.
Was, you are welcome.
That's so funny. Wow.
It's like, I had fun, you know, it's just like being a part of something, you know, even doing it was like, and it was experience, as something that I got a chance to, you know, on a personal level, I got to check off on the bucket list, and like, be a part of a movie, check, you know, it's like.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
Now you've done that.
It's like, I've done that. I've got, granted, it's not a mainstream movie. I'm not working with a big name actor or, you know, actress or, you know, that sort of thing. It's something, you know, it's like, it's something I could tell my kids when I finally have some, you know, or grandkids, you know, your great granddaddy was part of this movie, you know. You know, it's just weird, you know. It's just having fun, and I'm sure for you it was a wonderful experience, you know.
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. I mean, you know, like I said, I don't know if Idris Elba can really do much wrong, and he's just so, he's so charming and just so kind. Like, he's so kind. And, yeah, I had a blast. I mean, you know, it's hard to complain about shooting a movie with Idris Elba as his, you know, sort of kind of love interest. Like, how dare I ever complain about that? You know what I mean?
You make it sound like he's the kind of person that will just approach you with a scowl, and all of a sudden the whole face would just light up and go, hi, how are you? You know, and just like,
I don't know if I ever saw him scowling, to be honest with you. He just seemed like he genuinely was having such a good time the whole time. I don't think I ever saw him frowning, which is like such a weird thing to say, but he just seemed like he was just totally at home with everybody, and his wife was there. I got to meet her briefly. So I know, because they had just recently been married right before we started shooting, so I think that helped too. But, you know, like, you just sit with the cowboys, like, around a campfire between takes and just, like, shoot the breeze with everybody. It's just, like, that is the coolest thing ever, that, you know, you're a big star and you're not marching off to your trailer between every take when you're not needed, but you're just sitting around with regular people just chit-chatting and just talking. And he was so nice. He said to me at one point, he was like, did you, like, what else have you been in? What would I know you from? And I said, well, nothing. This is my debut. And he was just like, wow, I get to be in your film debut? And I was just like, that is the nicest, like, sweetest thing. And he didn't have to do that. He could have just been like, oh, cool, and left it. You know what I mean? But, like, or, you know, worse, he could have been like, God, I'm working with an amateur. Like, you know, but he didn't. He's just like, wow, that's really special. And I was just like, that is a memory I will treasure for my whole life, no matter what happens.
That sounds like a tale. It's like, I wanted to be angry with you.
No, I just, honestly, I just wanted to make sure I didn't throw up when I met him, because I was so nervous. And, he just immediately put me at ease. I met him on a horse, and he just smiled at me. And I immediately was like, I could die happy. Like, this is amazing.
And the thing is, the other cowboys on the set will probably be able to go home, tell their kids or their family, you know, I got to hang out with Idris all day today, and he was such a great guy, you know.
Like, how awesome is that? You know, it's not like we're LA or New York. We don't have a ton of productions moving through here. It's like every once in a blue moon. So this was really, it was a really special thing for him to be here. And, he ate at different restaurants around here. Like, he looked around Philly, he and his wife. And so that was, you know, it meant something to us to have him here and have the whole production here. I mean, it was really quite special. And I'm, like I said, I'm excited for people to be like, oh my gosh, where is that stable? I need to go find Fletcher Street Stables. Like, you know, that it's just so cool. The whole experience is so cool. I keep saying to people, I'm like, if I never make another movie, which, I mean, I hope to do, but if I never make another movie, this will be a fantastic experience to have been my one and only. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
It's a great start, especially to have encouragement from those that have been in the business for a number of years, that really had their ups and downs and seen success and failure in regards to different projects. And it's probably a wonderful feeling to kind of get that boost. And I hope the movie does well in, well, I don't know. It's kind of hard to...
On Netflix. It's going to be on Netflix.
It's going to be a Netflix original.
Yes. So that, you know, that could be great. I mean, yeah, because when we shot this was, you know, pre-pandemic. It wasn't even the pandemic wasn't even a thing. COVID wasn't even a thing yet when we shot this in 2019. So, yeah, I know everybody was, and myself included, really bummed about the fact that this won't be in theaters. But, you know, the best situation that you can hope for after that is for something like Netflix. I mean, everybody I know has Netflix. You know what I mean? So, you know, we're all home. We all have it. And I hope that, you know, we'll be seeing in the news or online, you know, Concrete Cowboy, number one on Netflix for the second week in a row. Like, that would just be amazing.
That would be wonderful to see. I'd probably, as soon as it pops up, as soon as I get, depending on when it debuts, it'll probably be the first thing I watch. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna watch this. I'm gonna watch it.
I already told people I'm gonna host some Zoom viewing parties so we can just...
Damn you, Skype.
And I know what's gonna happen. I'm gonna watch it one time, and I'm gonna hate everything I did in it, and I'm gonna be like, I can't watch myself again. I can't do it.
That or just be that one person. How much you want to bet he dies?
Yes, I
hate, damn it, Skype.
Misdirection at every turn.
Laughter from you. It's like, you know, it's like quiet. It's like watch he dies. All of a sudden, it's like Liz is going to make a smart ass comment, and all of a sudden quiet, then laughter. I'm like, what the hell? What the hell, Skype? What the hell?
What the hell, Skype?
But I think all in all that, as much as we could probably talk for another half hour, 45 minutes,
yes.
I'm going to take it as a cue to kind of head on off and kind of cut this lovely conversation short. I have to be up very early in the morning, so I'm going to have to...
No, absolutely.
As always with a lot of folks, is there anything you wish to, other than Concrete Cowboys, which hopefully, according to Netflix and your sources, it's coming out this spring sometime, so that might be between March and May. So we're looking at a standard of maybe 3 months-ish, if it doesn't get delayed again.
It's such torture. It's torture.
I want to rent it somewhere. But... it's maybe depending how things roll, when it finally comes out in your schedule, I would love to probably have you back on to talk about this film. And, but what I usually do is, like, if there's anything else you wish to promote or anything like that, you're more than welcome to do so. I'll add it to our show description, and when it goes up on our main website to the outlets, it'll kind of be as wide ignored, but hopefully it won't. But still, anything you wish to promote?
I don't have a whole lot going on at the moment, which is so sad because I get so sad when people ask me, what else do you have going on? I'm like, nothing. The pandemic has really been... but I have been... I've gotten into more writing. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I've gotten more into the writing aspect with my downtime. And so I just wrote a short film that will be coming out next month. And I'll be posting that on my...
Oh, damn it, Skype.
Not sure how that's going to work yet, but...
Liz, where was that going to be again? That's going to be posted
wide.
Up Skype. What? Where was it going to be posted up?
It's going to be, I'm going to post it on my Facebook page and also on YouTube somewhere. Okay. I'm not sure where yet.
So, I'll say this because I remember you said your daughter was part of, did you say your daughter was part of Breakfast Club?
No.
Oh, okay. I might have misheard then. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I'm trying to think what I did say. No.
Hello, everyone. Sorry for the interruption. I have to include this because of what just happened. The software I used to bridge the gap between Skype and Audacity just froze completely. Thus, anything that Liz was trying to say got completely cut off. And Liz, if you're listening, I'm deeply sorry. I apologize to her on... Skype messaging, because for whatever reason I couldn't hear her, but she could hear me. So again, Liz, I deeply apologize. And as I don't know if you at home might have heard, I did offer to have her back on once the movie is released over the next couple of months. I'll be more than happy to have her back on so we could talk about the movie and the reactions that she had and the reactions I've had and you know what I thought and what we both thought of the final product, because a lot of times actors and actresses don't see the final product that they were in. So it's hopefully we will have her back on again. It was a wonderful conversation with her. So again, I do apologize if things came off kind of ended abruptly. So again, take care. And now for the end of the show stuff. Welcome back, everybody. Yes, what I said was true. In that last little bit right after the interview was that our program, voice meter, decided to take a dump on us and kind of ruined what Liz had to say. We deeply apologize for that. Liz is more than welcome to come back on and promote whatever she's doing, whatever her family is doing as well. And that being said, if all of you out there have any questions, comments, or any type of remark, please feel free to email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com or leave a comment on the pinned post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/ The Longcoat Mafia Podcast. And by the way, all our links are on our website in the show description. I know my voice sounds crackly just because I'm not drinking right now. I'm not drinking coffee. I'm not drinking carbonated water or seltzer water right now. So that's why it's all scratchy and I sound weird. But still, back to plugging our social media stuff. You could also DM us on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is Longcoat Mafia. While you're there, hit that follow button and you get to see all the memes that we post, all the photos of the places that we've been and what have you. You can also talk to us on Twitter if and when we are on Twitter. We should get back to that. Our Twitter handle is Longcoat Mafia there. Hit that follow button so when we do start ranting and raving on Twitter, you're able to follow the conversation there and join in the conversation on there. Let's see, what else? We said Facebook, we said Twitter, we said Instagram. What else? We do have a TikTok that we post regards to certain clips, and whenever we have that small clip inspirational type thing, we do. Our TikTok handle is LCMPod. Let's see what else. Before I continue, we'll save that for the next episode while things are getting hammered out. We do have a YouTube channel. We'll be posting up a video from one of our current adventure that we are out and about. I don't know the audio quality of it, so I gotta check and put it together as I'm sewing it together. So our YouTube channel is The Longcoat Mafia Podcast. So you have to, when you go to YouTube, you have to search for that exactly. We're starting to add hashtags for our show and tags for our show, so it comes up a little bit higher in the search results. So, but still, we are the only channel out there that comes up with that when you search for the Longcoat Mafia Podcast. And to our haters that love to rag on us in regards to that, yes, I've done searches when I'm not searched into Google. Our stuff comes up within the first few searches. Our channel is number one. And may I say this, YouTube runs on algorithms. If all you do is dish out and look up hate, you're going to get that type of content back because that's what YouTube does. Durr. But to continue, while you are looking at the videos on our YouTube channel where we have like unboxings and mail call videos and convention floor tours when we've done floor tours and adventure type vlogs and all that, like the video, subscribe, the whole nine yards. We tend to do we've been doing a lot of YouTube exclusive videos, but we do tend to post videos exclusively on our Facebook page. So that's why we ask for you to kind of subscribe and follow us, or like and subscribe us on both Facebook and YouTube. That way you can get the most content for your free dollar. That's right. We don't charge for anything on our YouTube channel or our Facebook page. Let's see what else. We do have a Twitch channel. Our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/ Longcoat Mafia Pod, I think it is. Either way, again, the links are on our website, which is, because we're heading right into where you can find our episodes, our webpage is thelonkomafia.podbean.com and the Lonko Mafia is all one word. The word the is part of it. And again, it's the Lonko. Rented lips. Thelonkomafia.podbean.com. And you'll find the links to not just where you can find our episodes on your favorite podcasting distribution centers. You could find links to our Facebook page, our Twitter, our Instagram, our Twitch channels, and all that fun jazz. Plus, while you're there, you could download any one of our episodes going back to our first cringeworthy episodes over 5.5 years ago. That's right. Our episodes going back to like June and July 2015, over 290 episodes. That's right. Feel free to check out what we did and what we said in the past and how our views have changed over the years, if at all, and see who we spoke to in the past. Again, if I haven't said it already, you can stream the episodes straight from the website, or you can download the episodes and listen to them on your player of choice. They're there for you to enjoy. Or if you want, you could find the episodes. If I haven't mentioned it already, I'm just reiterating the fact that you can get them in these great players, which is iTunes, Amazon Music, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, I think Audible as well, plus a plethora of other places that you could get. I think CastBox, I think, is one other place. But if you choose to listen to us on the go, you're able to find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts. Yes, our issues with them have kind of disappeared. Amazon Music, Pandora, Audible, plus a plethora of other places. But please note, even though on a desktop or a laptop computer, you could easily get our episodes without any issue. But if you need to get the episodes, like the back episodes, through our website on a mobile device, you're going to need the Podbean app. It's free to sign up. You could get our episodes there. Plus, any other episodes that are through Podbean, I think, are... One of the friends of the show, Geek World Order, Randy, he puts out that Totally Radical podcast, I think it's called. Great episodes there through Podbean. You can subscribe to us and them on the show free. Listen to the show. They've been putting out great content. So either way, what else? I think that's about it. We have a lot of... I think starting next week in our interview series, we'll be talking with a lot of indie filmmakers over the next, couple of weeks. We have at least two episodes in the bank ready to be put together and ready to go for you. And we have another two more over the next week to record for you. So February into March, if not longer, we have loads of content for you. So stay tuned. As much as I would like to say stuff will get better audio-wise, but to kind of use the wrestling term, card subject to change. And we are kind of planning stuff for April. Pandemic happenings notwithstanding, so that will be a thing. So stay tuned for that and everything else. So as things get closer, we'll start promoting things on our end. But till then, stay tuned for next week's episode. So take care, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Bye.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia themed geek podcast.